Hello and welcome to the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. Make sure you follow OTG on Twitter at OTGBasketball. Also hit that subscribe button. I'm your host, Nick Fay. Corey's not here today, but no worries. In his place, international OTG writer, Jack Manuel. How you doing, Jack?
Yeah, man, stepping up for Corey today, mate. I'm sure we'll throw plenty of shade at the dude, but, you know, some people have to study. Some people have our priorities. So OTG is life, my friend.
OTG is life. But, you know, like Corey's got me feeling like 2015 Dame after the offseason. You know, I just lost LaMarcus Aldridge, Robin Lopez, Nicholas Batum, Wes Matthews. I'm here by myself holding it down, but we're still making the playoffs.
You still got a CJ, Jackson. Mate. You still got a CJ. Don't worry.
Yeah. CJ's stepping up for me today. But without further ado, our team today, the Portland Trail Blazers, and they're coming in at number 14. But before we talk about the ranking, let's talk Blazers last season. What are your thoughts on this team from last year?
Look, it was a really up and down. It was a year of sort of like broken into three parts for me, Nick. So they started the year really hot out of the blocks. I'm not sure if you remember. Do you remember the first sort of few games where Lillard was in the conversation for the MVP where Steve Kerr sort of called him out?
Yeah, I remember Dame catching fire.
Yeah, so like he was on fire early in the season. Steve Kerr had him as like the MVP. I'm not sure whether it was like, you know, to deflect that attention away from his Warriors, who obviously were still having their growing pains after that early loss to the Spurs. But, you know, they faltered midway and were a little bit inconsistent. But they finished the season, you know, at 41-41, you know, with the addition of Nurkic in those sort of final 20 or so games, which allowed them to go 18-5. But, you know, they got swept by the Warriors. But in those games still, we still got a heap out of myself and yourself, Dame and CJ. They were absolutely balling. But, you know, for me, CJ repaid the faith that the franchise gave him in that four-year, $106 million deal. And he was just, him and Dame were just simply outstanding along in that backcourt.
Yeah, honestly, it's kind of like, we mentioned this kind of in the Grizzlies pod. He's like, you think Grizzlies, think Mike Conley and Marc Gasol. Like, you think Blazers, you think Dame and CJ. And they just kind of cooked last year and kind of carried this team. But also, you know, they did make a nice move last year as well. They traded Mason Plumlee to Denver, and they also picked up a first-round pick in Joseph Nurkic. And Nurkic just went ham for them last year. You know, I think in the games that he played for Portland, they went 14-6, and that kind of pushed them into the playoffs. What are your thoughts on him in his possible in his new fit with Portland?
Yeah, look, I like it a lot. They've sort of been searching for that sort of third guy out there in Portland. But for me, there's question marks around him just in terms of his health because he's got a great skill set. It was one of my highlights for the season. But there's question marks around him in terms of health. And there's also a question mark around him in terms of contract, Nick. So,
yeah, I think he's a free agent at the end of this year, right?
Yeah. Do you think that the Blazers offer him a contract before he heads into restricted free agency? Or do you think that the Blazers bank on themselves and say, okay, we'll let you go into free agency. We'll see what you can get in that free market and we'll match it?
I think when you're, you know, talking restricted free agency in terms of the team, you know, I think it makes sense for you to just let them go out there and let the market kind of dictate how much they're going to pay.
Yeah.
You know, in most cases, you won't see a team like Brooklyn throw a ton of money at a player and offer them an offer sheet. Usually people stay away from restricted free agents, but the Knicks did it this year with Tim Hardaway Jr., but the Hawks knew, you know, they didn't want to pay that much. So you kind of have an amount set in mind. But like you mentioned, I think health is important. Nurkic, he stays healthy and he can contribute all year, you know, for 70 games at least. You know, I think they'll be willing to give him big money, especially because, like you said, they need that third wheel.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, you know, the market for bigs is certainly drying up in today's NBA, especially when, you know, someone like a Nerlens Noel, who is sort of the prototypical sort of defensive big man, couldn't even get an offer sheet. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, if another team sort of throws something like a four-year, $80 million deal at him, $20 million a season, and whether the Blazers match that because they're also in a bit of a precarious situation in terms of their luck. The Allen Crabbe trade, which I'm sure we'll talk about, certainly helped that. It certainly eased the load a little bit and, you know, it benefited the Nets greatly, but it also benefited the luxury tax, you know, not heading into that sort of realm because, you know, for a non-huge market team, they're not the Warriors, they're not the Lakers. You don't want to be paying that, especially when you have a roster that generally only has two stars on it and it doesn't leave you much flexibility.
Yeah, I mean, we're not talking about a contender here. We're talking about maybe a playoff contender, not even a lock probably this season to make the playoffs. And you brought up the cap. You know, they're in a really weird situation. Last year we talked about on the preview pod is, you know, obviously you need to pay Dame, you need to pay CJ, but then they go ahead and they throw big money at Allen Crabbe and Evan Turner. And now you have, you know, so much money locked up to four guys that can only play three positions. So you're pretty much setting yourself up in a bad position. So they definitely need to add some talent at that front court. And, you know, Nurkic couldn't be that guy. I think that's going to be something I really keep an eye on this season because he produced huge for them when he came to Portland. But we never really saw that consistently throughout the whole year. Because if he can maintain those numbers, he'll be a big boost. But that'll be the question mark.
Yeah, 80 games is very different to 20 games.
Yeah, and one thing you got to see from the Blazers next year is defensively early on, they were horrendous. They picked it up a little bit later in the season, but, you know, bottom 10 defensive rating, I think, you know, one of the worst three-point defenses in the league. And they just need to play harder. Maybe Nurkic can help with that because he did give them somewhat of rim protection. I think he averaged like almost two blocks with the Blazers. So that could help, but it's going to be, you know, they're going to need better effort from their guards because they kind of laid off a little bit last year to pick up the scoring load. So it's going to need good team defense if the Blazers want to be a better team this year compared to last year.
Yeah, I think from memory, I think they were about 24th in defense. Their offense has never been a problem. I think they were 10th or 11th. So certainly the Nurkic being out there for more than, you know, 20 games, and hopefully he maintains his health. CJ wasn't too bad watching this year's playoffs. His defense, I think, is a little underrated. But again, you know, if he has a huge scoring load on him, it's and a huge burden on that offensive end, you can't expect, you know, he's not going to be a Klay Thompson. He doesn't have the luxury of having Steph Curry and Kevin Durant around him. Damian Lillard, you know, he's like a Kyrie Irving. He's never going to have that defensive ceiling. But, you know, defense wins championships. You know, you generally have to be a top 10 defense. That's what we were saying about the entire NBA sort of world was saying about the Cavs last year, that their defense was just so torrid and horrible. And now everyone's sort of talking them up with the acquisition of Jay Crowder. But, yeah, I think you make a good point about the defense there, Nick.
Yeah, and like you said, you know, CJ's a capable defender. It's about being consistent and doing it all year. But if he has to put up 30 points and Dame has to put up 30 points, you know, it's going to be hard for them to kind of exert that effort defensively. But let's talk about playoffs. Obviously, they were able to squeeze into the playoffs. I think they just beat out the Denver Nuggets. But they just ended up being a part of history, getting swept by the Golden State Warriors. Any real takeaways from that series? Nurkic was banged up. He didn't really play.
Yeah, look, I watched most of those games, and CJ and Dame almost kept them in some of those games. It was sort of like how the Cavs lost in five last year, but it was, you know, a pretty close five games. It could have easily gone to six. I thought they could have stolen a game, maybe two. But, you know, I think we're going to see a lot of teams getting swept by the Warriors, especially in that first round over the coming years, because, you know, they've got such high-level elite talent. And, you know, who knows? The history could repeat itself this year if they get that eighth seed again. So I'm sure next season they're going to hopefully try and find some more consistency so they can, you know, get that seventh seed, because, you know, you'd much rather be versing the Houston Rockets or the San Antonio Spurs in the first round and backing your chances than against, you know, Steph Curry, KD, Klay, Draymond. You know, four players in the top 20 for, you know, for SI's top 100. It's, you know, it's going to happen to everyone, Nick. You know, they're everyone's favorite team. They're one of the best teams in the history of the association. So, you know, it's no fault of their own.
Yeah, honestly, I think the Warriors, they'll probably go down when it's all said and done as maybe probably the best team ever, in my opinion. Just, you know, what they're able to do and the way that they've done it. But like you said, last year, this was probably the least watched series for me. It's kind of when you record a game on DVR, you know what the score is already, but you just kind of watch to see what happens. That's how I felt when I watched the Blazers and Warriors. You know, I was watching the game, but at the end of the game, I knew that the Warriors would just turn it up and pull away. The Blazers just didn't have the talent level. Not many teams in the league can even compete with the Warriors for 48 minutes, so...
It's odd, though. They had a sort of similar strategy in terms of how they're building their talent within. So, you know, the Blazers have drafted within, you know, with Dame, with CJ, with Myles Leonard, with Allen Crabbe originally. Obviously, they don't have the same elite talent. But, you know, back in the day, Klay Thompson was drafted by the Warriors. Steph Curry was drafted by the Warriors, even though he wanted to go to the Knicks, and he said to his agents, like, get me out of here, I don't want to go to the Warriors. And the same with Draymond Green was taken in the second round. Everyone has said millions of things about how he should have gotten taken earlier. So they've got similar sort of strategies. It's just, you know, the talent itself, it's just polar opposites.
Yeah, well, I think one thing that Golden State did a little bit better than Portland has is they've kind of kept their cap flexibility open. Some of that was them getting the luxury of getting Steph Curry on that amazing deal because he was dealing with those ankle issues. But I think that's the major difference is going to be Portland isn't going to be able to bring in a big-time talent. We'll touch on someone they're trying to get right now, but it's going to be via trade. Let's talk highlight of the season for the Blazers last year.
For me, it was CJ McCollum, mate. You know, I'm comparing myself to him at the start of our podcast. He flirted with a 50-40-90 season. And in terms of, like, you know, for a player that had as much usage rate as him, as much of the play that ran through him, he only missed out by his field goal percentage. So he shot 42% from three, 91% from the free throw line, and 48% from the field. So his free throw percentage was the best in the league. Just to throw it out there, Nick, in terms of the backcourt, Dame and CJ, where do those guys rate in the NBA right now? So, I mean, we've got Clay and Steph, we've got Larry and DeRozan, Wall and Beal, Paul and Harden. Are they top two? Are they top three? Or are they just top five? What's your opinion on them?
Honestly, Jackie, I knew someone was going to throw this question at me today. Obviously, Steph and Clay are going to be number one, I think. And actually, you could make an argument for Houston being number one. So I think at the highest, they could probably be his top three. But yeah. I might go with Washington first, just because I like the upside I see there. As of right, maybe off of last season, I might go with Portland. But Washington moving forward, I think, has a little bit more potential. So I think Portland would be in my top five. When you have two guys that could, you know, each go for 35 and drop 70 as a backcourt in one night, it's kind of pretty exciting to watch. So, I mean, they easily could boost themselves in the top three, but I think top five right now. What about you?
Yeah, I'd probably have them third as well. Sort of like you were saying with the whole, they're definitely better than Larry and DeRozan just because I feel Larry has already peaked in age. He's now in his early 30s, whereas Damon CJ is still, you know, mid-20s, 26, 27. Wall and Beal are around that sort of same age, maybe a little bit younger. Beal obviously having a career year. CJ obviously having a career year as well. But I still think there is another level to Dame and CJ, so I'd probably put them third as well. To be fair, yeah, Paul and Harden certainly have probably the best talent combined, certainly in terms of passing as well. But we're yet to see anything from them yet, apart from, like, you know, a few pickup games and stuff. And You know what you're going to get from Clay and Steph. It's definitely the best 1-2 tandem going around. So, yeah, I'd probably have them third as well.
Yeah, definitely in the top five. And when you consider some of the things, it's always hard to gauge. But like you said, I think Dame has another level. And CJ just seems like a guy that keeps getting better. You know, he just seems like a guy that puts in a lot of work. CJ's like a guy you watch him play. He'll drop like 30 and he'll just like do it with an array of different moves. And you'll go to the park and try to do the same things because he's just such a crafty player. You know, he's not like a super athlete or anything, but he's a guy that's just like smart and knows how to play basketball and score and pass the ball too.
Like you're saying, he's got such a huge skill set, especially on that offensive end. And, you know, we're both very active on Twitter and I'm a big follower of CJ stuff. A few weeks ago, might even be a few months ago now, he was reviewing some tape and he was literally posting some of the tape that he was watching and sort of analyzing it with his Twitter followers. And it was just interesting to see how, like, he had all these different crafty inside move, outside moves, and how he's looking to even increasing his game further because, you know, after winning that most improved player and getting that big contract, he's had two sort of big career years. So there's still a lot to come for CJ for sure. So he was definitely my highlight, but, you know, video game Dame, apart from, you can't ask for more out of Damian Lillard, despite the fact that he's still yet to earn an All-Star nod.
But I think, you know, they should stop, you know, don't vote him into the All-Star game because every time he gets pissed off and he just goes on a tear, and that kind of helps the Blazers get into the playoffs. So maybe, you know, if you're the Blazers, be like, all right, you know, I know Dame might be pissed about this, but we need him to have that little extra edge.
He's that guy that thrives on that, similar to like a John Wall, similar to like a DeMarcus Cousins. Those guys like thrive on being snubbed. And I think, you know, because the West got even more stacked, you know, when it goes down at the end of his career, and we look at, say, Damian Lillard's, he's 35, 36 years old, and at the end of his career, we're reflecting on it, and we see, say, only three or four All-Stars, it's like, we said, okay, that's a bit low. But when you look back on it, the amount of teams he's just missed, like, if he was playing in the East right now, he gets a nod every year. He's better than Kemba. He's challenging John Wall. You know, John Wall's probably the best guard in the East right now, but he's certainly on that level.
Yeah, no, definitely. If he's in the East, he's definitely getting in there. Like you said, I'd have him above Kemba. I'd have him right under John Wall and kind of probably on that same level with Lowry. And we'll see what happens with Lowry this year. But talking about my highlight, I kind of hinted at it before. I'm going to go with Nurkic. I just thought, you know, being able to come over here into Portland and just make, you know, such an impact and kind of help the Blazers in the playoffs, that was huge. And it kind of gave him the possibility of having that third wheel in the lineup and adding some talent to the front court, which they have definitely needed.
Yeah, it's almost like they're a bit too stacked in that front court now, especially with who they've drafted and, you know, still having Myers Leonard, still having Ed Davis on the roster. But, you know, they can build around a core three now. You know, you need your two stars and your sort of complementary star like a Kevin Love, like a Draymond Green. And Nurkic is almost the perfect fit for them because he can ease the load for Dame and CJ on the offensive end. And he can certainly get them some better looks because he's got some nice aggression on the defensive end, and he can, you know, open up some lanes for those two guys as well.
Yeah, and he gives them that, like, extra toughness. You know, they definitely need that inside presence. You mentioned they have a good amount of bigs, but for me, like, I just feel like none of them have really stepped up and kind of taken advantage of the opportunity. So it was kind of impressive to see Nurkic come over there. And you think about it, like, yo, these bigs, like, you're playing with CJ and Dame, and they're not, like, ball hawks. They'll hit you if you're open under the hoop, so you just got to find the space. What was the biggest disappointment for the Blazers last season?
I mean, you might have a similar one to me, Nick, but for me, it was Evan Turner. I mean, he's on a four-year, $70 million contract. And, you know, while he wasn't as disappointing as, say, Joakim Noah at New York, but he can certainly be lumped into the same category as Luol Deng and our boy, the Mozgod, as players who thoroughly, thoroughly underperformed according to their contracts. You know, finished the season averaging a paltry 9 points, 3.8 rebounds, 3.2 assists. His shooting, while improved upon the previous year, it was still way below average, not even in the 30% range. And, you know, with Crab gone now, he's certainly going to be forced to become even more of an offensive force. You know, he's definitely not a spot-up shooter. He's probably got a bit more, a better passer than Crab was. But, you know, he's certainly going to have to step up. For a guy who's on $70 million to not even average 10 points a game, that's saying something. He's definitely needs to step up.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, Evan Turner's the easy choice here. And him and Crab are kind of opposite in a way, in the sense that Evan Turner's a lot more comfortable with the ball in his hand. He likes the usage rate. He's going to score mid-range and inside. He's going to, you know, try to do post moves and things like that. Three-point shooting-wise, not very good. I think he shot like 26% last year. He's a pretty good defender when he wants to be, but I honestly can't recall what I thought about this signing last year, but, like, looking back at it, it just is such a trash signing. And that's not to say Evan Turner's a bad player, because I think in the right situation, it would make sense. But putting him on a team with Dame Lillard and CJ McCollum, who are going to be on the floor majority of the time, you know, you're going to stagger their minutes. And Evan Turner's a guy who kind of needs the ball in his hands. He's kind of like almost a point forward that kind of played like a backup point guard role for when he was in Boston. So he's not really going to get enough touches to ever really be successful in Portland. So it just kind of, I don't know. I can't really envision Evan Turner really working out and shining in Portland and giving them what they need from the bench. I would have probably rather have Alan Crabb, even though the contract, you know, people hate on that, but he can shoot the three ball at a high rate. And when you have Dame and CJ, you want space, not somebody who's shooting under 30% from three.
Exactly. And I think I'll post something to you, Nick. Tim Hardaway recently signed a four-year, $72 million contract with the Knicks. Who do you think is more deserving of the lofty contract? Someone like an Evan Turner or someone like a Tim Hardaway?
I mean, I can tell you who I'd rather have, because determining the contracts is a little bit tough, because I'll cut Portland a little slack. At the time they handed out the contract, you know, the salary cap was going crazy. Like you mentioned, Mozgov got a nuts deal. Like Bismack Biyombo got a crazy deal. Like all these, you know, players are just, you know, signing big deals. So I'll cut them some slack on that. The Knicks overpaid this year when people weren't really overpaying. So ignoring the contracts, I would say the player I'd probably rather have moving forward would be Tim Hardaway Jr. just looking at both teams in the sense that neither of them are going to be contending for a championship anytime soon. You know, Tim Hardaway Jr. has a higher ceiling. Like, he could end up being a better player. We don't think Evan Turner is going to get much better than he already is. And as you know, I love three-point shooting. If you can't shoot the three, you get off my team, unless you're a big. So,
Savage.
You're
the Dan Tony of the OTG world. You know, three-point layups or nothing.
Pretty much. But I mean, I can really understand why that makes sense. And I think having a wing nowadays that can't shoot the three ball. And if you have other bigs, like, they have plenty of guys in the front court that can't shoot the three either, that kind of balance it out. So it's kind of a tough situation for them with that. Maybe he'll pick it up and be better than I thought. Who knows?
Yeah, we'll wait and see. I mean, in terms of, because they have such little backcourt depth now. I mean, Shabazz Napier is their backup point guard. He's certainly going to be playing, you know, other than CJ, when Damien's off the floor, they'll probably stagger through the regular season, him and CJ's minutes. But Evan Turner, like you were saying, is probably going to have play a ball-handling role, playmaking role. Because, you know, at the end of the day, he is better than, you know, LeBron's best draft pick, Shabazz Napier. we all remember that back in those Miami Heat days. But, yeah, it's certainly – I mean, I'd definitely rather have a Tim Hardaway Jr. There's sort of two wings in today's game. You've got like your I think I've made this comparison before. So like a Rondé Hollis Jefferson, where you're a sort of a small forward that can play big and can guard multiple positions. And you've got those 3-and-D wing guys that can sort of space the floor a bit better. Rondé can't space. Evan Turner can't space. But Evan Turner doesn't have the defensive flexibility that a Rondé does and sort of those other guys have as well.
And I think that's why you're seeing Rondé get pushed more to the four position. You know, those wings that can't shoot, I think, are less relevant unless you have a center or a power forward that can kind of make up for that lack of spacing. So that's why you're seeing, you know, more small ball, more of those like versatile wings, like you mentioned, that can not necessarily shoot the ball, but they can still score and they play some defense. But let's talk about this ranking. We talked a lot about last season, but what do you think about the Blazers this year coming in at number 14?
I think that's really the OTG staff have sort of hit it on the nail head. I think it's quite fair. They didn't make a heap of moves this offseason. The team is still, like I mentioned earlier, still super young. They were the second youngest team behind the Philadelphia 76ers. You know, in a stacked West, they could probably push for a sixth seed, maybe a fifth seed if Dame, CJ, and Yusuf stay healthy. But they're sort of lumped into that range with the Clippers, the Jazz, the Nuggets, and the T-Wolves, which will be sort of previews that we'll be having very soon. So I'm sure it'll be interesting to see how things play out for those teams. And, you know, the Blazers will certainly be around the mark. It'll just be, you know, come game 82, will they sneak in to the eighth seed like they did, or will they be pushing for a top six, top five seed, you know, if all things going well?
Yeah, I think you hit it right on the head too. You know, this is a ranking that I probably agree with. You know, pretty fair in that 14, that teenish role. You're not too high in the teens, but it's just the Blazers are weird. Like you mentioned, the West is like, I don't know if I could see them getting as high as 5 or 6. I think probably 7 or 8 is where I see them at, just because I think even though some of the other teams are adding a lot of new pieces, they're just a lot more talented than the Blazers are in certain areas. It's tough to ask CJ and Dame to carry you another year. Injury from either of those guys. Obviously, having Nurkic around will help, but the West is just super stacked.
It is. And I mean, but the thing with Dame and CJ is that they've proved that they can stand the court for quality amounts of games. They have rarely had, major injuries. You know, we've been talking about Nurkic and the fact about how his health is a priority. But you know what you're getting out of Dame and CJ, and, you know, their bodies haven't failed them yet.
Knock on wood.
Yeah, knock on wood, exactly. We don't want to jinx them because I'm a big fan of the Blazers. But, you know, if you're comparing, say, CJ to a Bradley Beal, Bradley Beal has only just had one sort of full season or close to full season where he's had his health and he's been able to produce, whereas CJ's now had two and he's going into his third season where he's looking at probably a possible 50-40-90 season. And, you know, the 50-40-90 season is the epitome of efficiency. If they can get a 50-40-90 season out of CJ, I reckon they could certainly push for a top six.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, I think Dame and CJ will probably have huge years. And I'm not saying, like, they haven't stayed healthy. I'm just saying when you ask, you know, players to do so much for you year after year, eventually I think it catches up. But I think, yeah. Like, Dame and CJ, I think I don't have any question marks about them. I think they'll have great seasons and probably be a little bit better. It's when I think about the rest of the roster, like that small forward, that power forward position, like I really don't know what I'm getting. And even like you said, Nurkic has had the injury history, so I don't really know what I'm getting. And they didn't make any additions, and they lost a great three-point shooter. So I'm probably a little bit lower, I think, on the Blazers than you are, but we'll talk about that a little bit more. Let's talk additions. Like I said, not any huge offseason signings, but they did make two picks in the draft. They traded up in the draft, and they drafted Zach Collins. You know, there was definitely some talk about this pick being a little bit of a reach. Zach Collins did not impress in Summer League. What are your thoughts on him?
Look, we were chatting a little bit about the other day in the Hornets podcast how they got Malik Monk for a steal at pick 11. I'm going to pose the question to you, Nick, my friend. Should the Blazers have taken Malik Monk instead of Zach Collins?
I probably wouldn't have taken Collins. I mean, it kind of depends on the Blazers' like mindset, but I think I'm grabbing Monk in that situation. Not that you need another guard or anything, but, you know, he can play guard minutes, develop him. Worst case, you trade him. You know what I mean? Like, I think a lot of time in the NBA, teams will either drafting best player available too seriously, or they won't take it in account at all. Sometimes you just have to look at the board and be like, you know, Malik Monk, this dude fell to us. We just need to snatch him up.
Yeah, and I mean, I'll argue with you, and I say that I think Malik Monk would have fit in perfectly as a bench role. Like I was mentioning earlier, Shabazz Napier is their backup point guard. You have Malik Monk as a backup point guard to Damon CJ. That eases the offensive load so much. I mean, we were mentioning he's got a little bit of an injury scare, but he's still very young, and he can make his ways in the NBA, that's for sure. But going into this draft, the thought process behind Neil O'Shea, they were really high on Zach Collins. There was a reason why they traded up for him. But again, like you were mentioning, why would you go after another big guy when your front court is obviously already stacked and you draft Caleb Swanigan, another big who had, unlike Collins, we'll be speaking about him soon. He had a great summer league and probably fits in a little bit better right now. So I don't get the drafting of Zach Collins. I think he's got a huge upside, and he's got a huge versatility in his game, especially on the offensive end, as a modern sort of center. But in terms of fit right now, you know, to me, he looks like his ceiling could be high. But right now, Myers Leonard does a lot of the things that Zach Collins does. They don't need another Myers Leonard. They need some guard depth. And Malik Monk would have been perfect for that.
Yeah, and actually, you made a great point about Monk, and not only would he be able to, you know, fill in a backup guard role, but having a guy like CJ on the floor with him, or a guy like Evan Turner who can handle the ball and kind of run the offense, because Monk, you know, he's probably more of a shooting guard, but he could probably play minutes at the point guard. His playmaking is still kind of up in the air, so I think that would be a great asset, and there's kind of a good mix of veterans that could help him out. Like you said, Zach Collins, we could be wrong about him, because I think one thing about him, like you said, there is a high ceiling, and he's very raw. He definitely needs to develop some more. I don't even believe he started at Gonzaga last season, and he played the backup role, and he just did so well that teams were kind of hyped on him. So we'll see what happens with him. And you mentioned Myles Turner. It's like a lot of people drew the Myers-Leonard comparison, and they were just, you know, it kind of made them less interested because Myers Leonard has just been a disappointment in Portland.
I was just going to say about Myers Leonard, you know, the whole agent, the whole roster right now, the whole front office, they are looking at trying to get rid of an Ed Davis or a Myers Leonard, but Myers Leonard's contract is so unfriendly right now. I believe it's at somewhere around the $10, $11 million range, that not a lot of teams want to take that on. I think Myers Leonard has, you know, a lot of tools, but he doesn't have all the attributes and the basketball IQ that, you know, are so highly valued. But Caleb Swanigan, Nick, what did you think of this?
I thought that was a pretty good pick. Obviously, pairing them both together didn't make as much sense. But like you said, summer league-wise, a lot of people were super high on Caleb Swanigan. And I think, you know, for good reason, he definitely showed he can just ball. And he could probably – I think he'll see more minutes this year than Zach Collins will.
Yeah, I think he will as well. I mean, it depends on health. It depends on where they see Swanigan fitting in. You know, his athleticism isn't as high as is Zach Collins. But, you know, in summer league, you know, and we take summer league with a grain of salt, he averaged a touch under 15 points and over 10 rebounds. You know, if he can, you know, focus his energy on that, you know, that rebounding and give them, you know, a bit of a spark off the bench, he certainly a valuable piece to add. And at pick 26, it's worth taking a flyer on a guy like this. He seems to have quite a good basketball IQ. Seems to be one of my favorite things when it comes to NBA players. But I think it's more important than ever in terms of, in today's NBA, you know where your role is, you know where your skill set is, and what you can provide for your team. And I think Caleb Swanigan certainly has that.
Yeah, definitely. And you know what's kind of interesting about Portland going to the draft? I like almost had it guaranteed in my brain that they were trading some of their picks to get rid of some of these salaries, like you mentioned, trying to get rid of Leonard, maybe get rid of Turner, and the guy we'll talk about in a little bit, Allen Crabbe. Like I was almost convinced that they would at least trade, two of these picks to move one of these contracts, and that did not happen. It was kind of weird because I felt like they wanted to have some cap space and at least get themselves out of that luxury tax area. It kind of happened with the Allen Crabbe trade, but.
And to piggyback off your point, Nick, I think they're looking. Don't expect to see Ed Davis on this roster for very long. I think he has some contract flexibility that I think a lot of people will like. His health hasn't been great, but as a he's a nice piece, a nice sort of added piece for people off the bench as a big man who can sort of do a few things. Sort of like your Quincy AC, your Trevor Booker types. We make a lot of Nets comparisons. We've got two Nets fans on this pod and OTG fans. So I'm sorry, you're going to hear a lot of Nets comparisons, but I think Ed Davis could be traded before the deadline.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Like you said, he's a guy who can come in, give you some good energy, some rebounding, some inside presence. He's not a huge guy, but he plays bigger than he is. But let's talk, you mentioned the Nets already. Let's talk departures and the one trade they had, Allen Crabbe for Andrew Nicholson, who they waived. Andrew Nicholson, in my opinion, was probably one of the worst players in the NBA last season, but they got rid of Allen Crabbe after matching the offer sheet that the Nets, had for Allen Crabbe. There's a lot of talk that they weren't going to match it, and they ended up doing it. And then the next summer, they just end up trading him in a salary dump that allowed the Nets to get a salary dump too. So it kind of worked out for both parties, more so for the Nets than anybody in Allen Crabbe.
Yeah, I mean, when I saw that, as soon as I got this Bleacher Report notification, I was ecstatic. I mean, yes, the contract is still high, but this is a guy that the Nets wanted. And we're essentially getting him on a contract where you minus that $6 million of what Andrew Nicholson was making. We're getting him on a 13, 12, $13 million or
Exactly.
$6 million discount. So it makes sense for us to make this move. He's part of the youth movement of a Kenny Atkinson. I think his defense is lacking, but he has proved in the past that he has some skills on that range. We're obviously getting him as, right now he is the second best 3-point shooter in the league, albeit on less usage than, say, a Kyle Korver or a JJ Redick. But, someone that can still shoot 44% from the 3-point line is no slouch that by any stretch. But they lose wing depth, the Blazers here, and I think they need. You were mentioning earlier, Nikhail, that small forward position is something where they're lacking. Yes, Allen Crabbe is essentially a two that can play some three, but alongside a CJ, he's a three, and I think losing Crabbe, they would have much preferred to have attached, say, like a Myers Leonard and Ed Davis. I think Allen Crabbe probably would have been low on their list in terms of trying to get rid of and add some flexibility to their salary. But they need to make those moves now because they are certainly hamstrung, and no one's going to take on that Evan Turner deal.
Yeah, and I think one thing that kind of made it a little bit easier for the Blazers to dump Crabbe would have, the fact is they didn't have to include any draft picks. If they were to try to dump, a Turner or a Leonard, it definitely would have taken a first. And I'm sure they were pretty ecstatic, and they probably think, the Allen Crabbe contract is bad. Obviously, the Nets see something they like in him, but how do you think they'll replace his 3-point shooting? Like you said, he shot 44% from three last season. CJ shot 40+%. Dame shot 37%. 35%, not too crazy. And we said Evan Turner, he sucks shooting threes.
No, he's and you said 26%, I think it was.
Yeah.
So, I don't think they can replace it, Nick. For not to be glum, but in terms of the additions they've made, they haven't made any additions. Apart from in the draft, they've got Zach Collins and Caleb Swanigan. Zach Collins can shoot some threes. They're banking on the internal development, the natural development of some of the younger guys. Evan Turner might shoot 32% this year. That'll be a huge jump for someone like him, but 32% is that range where you want an average shooter, because you can't really leave them outside there. You can, but then at the same time, they might make you pay. He's certainly going to work on his spot-up shooting, but like you're mentioning, Harkless, Vonleh, Aminu, they're certainly going to have to increase their three-point range. We're going to see Dame jack up, 7 threes a night. We're going to see CJ jack up 5 threes a night. That number might just have to increase by 1 or 2 per night to make up for the loss of Crab.
Yeah, I think you mentioned Aminu and Harkless will be the two guys that I probably keep an eye on that I think will probably have to improve. And obviously, having Nurkic for a full season will have a better offensive impact. But like we mentioned, he doesn't provide much shooting. So either did Mason Plumlee, but it's just something to keep in mind. When you lose a floor spacer like that, because Allen Crabbe not only hit, wide open threes, he hit a lot of contested threes. So if I'm not mistaken, he shot close to 40% on contested threes as well.
Yeah, he is. And plus, he has some size to him as well. So he can shoot over some of those. Like he has, I think he's around the same size as Corby, if not a bit taller. And he's got more size than a JJ Redick, who's known as being one of the best spot-up shooters as well.
And good length. He's got a pretty good wingspan, I think.
Exactly. So that certainly adds to the value in terms of being able to shoot from deep and from the perimeter. And he's got youth on his side. The contract he's on isn't the most desirable for the Blazers, but it certainly works for the Nets, who have a lot of space.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the Nets aren't going to spend their money anywhere else, so why not try to take a risk on a young guy? I'm all for the move. But back to kind of Blazer talk. We mentioned it, you mentioned it. They really didn't make any changes this year. It's pretty much the same team other than losing Crab, adding the rookies. Do you think that's a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's neither here nor there, Nicholas. Not to not answer your question with the definitive answer, but when you don't make any moves, you can't really judge it until the season has happened. So, I mean, not to take the easy way out and not answer the question, but I think it makes sense, because like a team like the Sixers, like a team like the Nets, albeit the Nets made a lot of moves and the Sixers did as well, but the Portland were, like you were mentioning earlier, they were hamstrung by the moves that they made in the previous season, in giving Myers Leonard, in giving Mo Harkless, in giving Evan Turner contracts. So even as much as they wanted to, the biggest rumor that has come out in the last sort of few months about the Blazers getting any sort of talent has been, they've joined the Carmelo Anthony sweepstakes.
You mean the guy that ESPN ranks 64th?
Oh, yeah, the guy that Lonzo Ball is apparently better than him. Gosh. I mean, we can do a whole how ludicrous that is, and how ESPN has fallen off the wagon more than, any other team in the NBA right now. But that's for another day. I think that, do you think that they can get Carmelo Anthony, or is this all smoke and mirrors and Melo's sort of just been like, yeah, he's probably putting on this facade. Like, you get the text and it's just like, I'll do it. But then in the back of his mind, it's like, come on, D'Antoni, get this done. Daryl Morey, get this done for me. I don't want to have to go to Portland. I want to win a championship. I want to compete.
Yeah, I think, like you said, it's all Melo. If Melo is open to going to the Blazers, I think the Knicks will be willing to take an offer the Blazers can throw at them. Like we know, Houston can't really throw much at the Knicks right now, and they want to at least get some type of value so they could be like, we traded Carmelo and here's a young piece and a veteran. Maybe they trade him in like a salary dump that picks him up some young players too. I mean, I think it's all up to Melo, and right now the vibe I'm getting is that Melo seems okay staying in New York, so I don't think he'd really be open to this Blazers trade unless maybe the Knicks start off the season like a 6-18 or something like that.
Yeah, I think it's Houston or New York, and I don't think, as much as CJ can tweet photoshopped versions of Melo in a Blazers uniform, I don't think that's going to convince him to make the move from Manhattan all the way to Seattle.
And let's be honest, they make the move for Melo, they might not even be a top three team in the West.
No. Exactly. It doesn't really move the needle that much for them. Yes, it gives them some credibility. And I mean, that offense, man, that'd be a fun offense to watch. And I mean, I've got them pretty high on my league pass ranking, which we'll get to a bit later. But adding Melo to that four, you know, that'd be really fun to watch.
Excuse me, that would be definitely really exciting. But I think, you know, if I'm Melo, I'm like, I'm not taking this. I'd rather just go to Houston and actually have a chance. Because, like, you know, Melo, I mean, Houston adds Melo. We could talk about a Golden State versus Houston situation where, you know, it's a real possibility. Like, we're talking Blazers and Warriors. I'm not flinching at all. It doesn't really change my take.
He makes more of an impact with Houston than he does if he goes to Portland. I think you hit it on the head.
Yeah. Yeah, even if he went to Cleveland, he'd make more of an impact as well. So I just don't think the Blazers would make a lot of sense in this situation. But let's talk starters. Who's starting for the Blazers next season? I think this is pretty locked in almost.
It's locked in almost, but that power forward position, Nick, I've been listening to a lot of Locked On pods. I've read a lot on SB Nation and stuff. And the power forward position is one that has been getting a lot of conjecture. So, I mean, that backcourt is set in stone. We've got Lillard, we've got McCollum. The small forward position is going to be going to Mo Harkless. But I'm torn between Aminu and Vonleh. The front office is quite high on Vonleh in terms of his upside and his youth. But Aminu is a much more proven asset. And, of course, Nurk is just starting at center position. I'll be interested to hear your takes on who you think gets that starting position, whether it makes much of a difference if Aminu or Vonleh start, and whether they change it according to, you know, what happens during the season. But it'll be interesting to see who starts on that opening night. But
You actually made a great point. Is, you know, I wasn't even thinking about, like, starting lineup and Vonleh. I was just thinking about, like, the finishing lineup. And in my head, that would be Dame, CJ, Harkless, and Aminu, and Nurkic. But, you know, they could possibly go with Vonleh if they wanted to. I think the three-point shooting would be the issue. Obviously, Aminu off the bench, he's not necessarily, you know, a guy that's going to provide you an offensive spark. He's more of like a complementary defensive player that can kind of get you some fast breaks and maybe hit some threes. So I think he fits good with the starting lineup. But if they're really high on Vonleh, it could be a possibility.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of people have been mentioning in Blazers world that Vonleh and Nurkic had some really nice chemistry towards the end of the season. So whether they want to build on that or whether they want to build on that, say, focus on having those guys sort of anchor the second unit. It'll be interesting to see come opening night, because a lot of these teams that we've talked about, you know, the starting lineups, the finishing lineups are sort of set in stone. But, you know, that one position for the Blazers, that power forward position, and, you know, they're stacked when it comes to that power forward center position. So who knows, by the end of the year, we could see Caleb Swanigan starting or Zach Collins starting in the power forward position to give him some more perimeter shooting. It's up in the air for sure.
Yeah, and like I mentioned, I've kind of have a bias towards shooting, and that's probably why to go with Aminu, because I just think floor spacing is so important. And when you want to make life as easy as possible for Dame and CJ, unless Vonleh can prove that he can consistently hit a 3-point shot or even like a long two, you know, they're gonna need open space. And Nurkic and, you know, Vonleh both posting up in the paint, it's not really gonna make it easy for CJ and Dame. So that's the only reason I'm just really pro spacing and 3-point shooting.
It makes sense in today's NBA. You know, unless you're the New Orleans Pelicans, you know, where you've got two guys, but albeit those guys can still move out to the perimeter a little bit, and they've got some a nice sort of pass like a Rondo. It'll certainly be interesting to see, because, you know, 3-point shooting has never been more important than in 2017.
Exactly, and the Warriors have definitely showed us that. Absolutely. But breakout starter for the Blazers this season.
Look, you could go with a Lillard or a CJ, because I still think that those guys could go absolutely bonkers, and one or both of them could make the All-Star because they still haven't made it, and it still bewilders me that those two guys haven't made an All-Star appearance yet. And I mean, it fuels some of Dame's fire raps, hashtag Dame Dollar. But I think it goes without saying, one of your guys, Jusuf Nurkić, for me, he had that huge breakout towards the end of the season before he got injured. He fits the youth mold of the Blazers. You know, he's still quite young. He had great averages, you know, 15.2 points, 10.4 rebounds, a couple of assists, 3.2, and then two blocks as well. You know, if he can get as better on the defensive end, I think you might have mentioned this already as well, Nick, then, you know, the sky's the limit for this guy. He can be a top 10 center in today's NBA, because, you know, today's big man, it's all about the versatility. You look at Porzingis, you look at Towns, you look at Miles Turner, all these guys have great offensive skill sets, but they balance it by having a nice defensive skill set, whether that be rim protection or blocking or versatility to be able to defend the perimeter a little bit. So, yeah, it's got to be Nurkic.
Yeah, I think Nurkic is, you know, like, it's almost like you have to pick him because, like you said, Dame and CJ could definitely break out, but, like, how much better are we really going to see from them? You know, a few points or a little bit more efficiency will be there. And I'm not really willing to bet on Mo Harkless or Aminu, so I kind of almost by default went with Nurkic. And like you said, you know, if he can make some improvements defensively, I know he lost a lot of weight this season, so hopefully that helps his mobility in terms of, you know, guarding pick and rolls, maybe having to get on the perimeter a little bit more. And if he's able to maintain pretty similar numbers, you know, for what he had with Portland, like you said, you know, maybe the points are down a little bit, but he can keep the rebounding and the blocks up. That's what they need. They don't need somebody to come in and average 20 points. They need somebody to just be that paint presence, that defensive anchor, set good screens, you know, just provide some more respect down low for that team.
Yeah, and I think, like you were saying, there's no other logical choice. So, I mean, it has to be Nurkic. Yeah. And, you know, because we only saw 20 games of it from him, he's the natural breakout starter because if he can get 60, 70 games out of him, then he's obviously going to be a breakout starter.
Exactly. Let's go to, and this is actually a tough question. Breakout bench player for the Blazers next season.
Look, I've hated on him quite a bit this podcast, but for me, it's got to be Evan Turner because the departure of Crabbe means Turner's going to see an increase, not only minutes, but in workload as well. His offensive efficiency, we've mentioned, leaves a lot to be desired. You know, we mentioned his three-point shooting, but he's shooting from the field as well. He's under 43% at 42.6. So he'll need to bring the three-point percentage up dramatically, but also, you know, to increase the overall offensive efficiency of this team. Whether, you know, the Blazers divert his role a little bit to becoming more of a ball handler, but at the same time, they still lack a lot of shooting with the loss of Allen Crabbe. So I don't know how they're going to make that up without Evan Turner taking a few more shots as well. But at the same time, I think those numbers that we were mentioning, you know, under 10 points a game, I think naturally you'll probably expect, you know, at least 12 points a game from him this year, you know, just based purely on minutes, sort of like what we saw from CJ when there was the injury of Nicholas Batum in that year and we saw his breakout. Not sure if we're going to see a CJ breakout from Turner, but definitely see some increases in that box score.
I mean, you definitely are filling in for CJ today. We definitely have a good backcourt rhythm because I'm making the same pick. You know, I think it's almost by choice because I mean, like, yeah, that 1-2 punch right there. It's almost by default a little bit too. It's like you look at this roster and you're like, I don't really know which other bench guys are going to have a good role. And this is a guy I at least know that's going to get his role increased just because they need a veteran and they want to make the playoffs. And the lack of depth and lack of consistency kind of makes Evan Turner my choice. It's like both these guys I didn't necessarily want to pick, but like looking at the roster, I don't really need other options.
No, there's not enough depth. I mean, they have a lot of depth in that front court, but it's very much unproven. You could probably pick an Aminu or a Vonleh, depending on who you think's not going to start. But at the same time, you're banking on two guys and you don't really know what you're going to get much out of. Evan Turner's almost a somewhat known prospect. You know, he had his days in Philly and in Boston where he produced some of his best days, and now he's on this huge contract. And you know, if CJ can prove it and validate it, then you know, at least Turner has to somewhat validate it. You know, I'm sure he's been working on his game quite a bit in the offseason and reading like a lot of fan sites. A lot of Blazers fans are quite high on him going into this new season, 2017-18 season. So, you know, I'm not one to hate. I'm one to hope for the best out of guys. So I hope Evan Turner has you know, he could be up there for a most improved player if he gets the best out of himself.
Or a six-man role.
Or a nice six-man role, absolutely.
One guy I'll throw out there is Pat Connaughton. You know, he's a guy who was a rookie pick. I think he was part of the Rondae Hollis-Jefferson trade back in the day with Mason Plumlee. And he's a guy who he's kind of worked with the Blazers for a few years now, and he might get to see some minutes, some more consistent minutes. Like we mentioned, that guard depth is an issue, so it'll be kind of his year to step up.
Yeah, I think that's a nice little under-the-radar pick that you've got there, Nick, because a lot of people out there in Portland and are pretty high on him, especially with the lack of guard depth that they've got. You know, Shabazz Napier, they didn't pick up Malik Monk in the draft. You know, a guy like him could see some minutes, especially if there's an injury to anyone in that backcourt and they don't make any more moves to increase the depth there. Someone like a Pat Connaughton could certainly get some an increased workload.
And he's somebody who'll come in and play hard and play some defense, bring some energy, and that's kind of what they need when they have the star players there. But let's talk wins. Best case scenario for the Blazers next season, win wise.
I think I mentioned it early when we were going through the ranking. I think they can get as high as 46 or 47 wins. And depending on the teams around them, that could mean a 6th seed, 7th seed, 5th seed, maybe. Nurkic continues his rich vein of form, and the backup unit, you know, finally find some form to back up the Damon CJ. But yeah, I think 46, 47. Some people might be a bit higher on them, but I just don't see, we've mentioned over and over, the theme has certainly been that they don't have a lot of depth and flexibility right now. So I think that's probably their ceiling for me.
Yeah, I think that 46 to 48 win range, you know, maybe if things go perfect, they can get up to 48, but it's tough. Like we mentioned before, the Western Conference is so stacked and they just didn't do enough things to make me be like, all right, this team's going to be a lot better.
Teams around them, like you look at the Denver Nuggets, the Utah Jazz, even despite the loss of Gordon Hayward, made some moves. You look at the Timberwolves, who didn't make it last year, but are expected to make a huge jump. And I'm sure I'm forgetting a team or two, but all those teams made a move. Like, you know, Millsap to the Nuggets certainly elevates them even further because their defense has been waning. Their offense is one of the best in the league, but you know, you add a Paul Millsap in there, your defense automatically elevates itself. But that the Blazers did, because they were so hamstrung in the offseason, that they did to elevate themselves even further. So they're sort of banking on what they've got.
Yeah, I mean, it's just tough. Like you said, the West is, you know, you have the Warriors, the Spurs, the Rockets, the Thunder. Now you have the Timberwolves, who are super talented. Then a team, like you mentioned, the Nuggets, adding a player like Paul Millsap, which definitely flies under the radar. Like, I don't know how people don't realize Millsap is a really good basketball player yet, but he really is, and he's going to be a great partner for Jokic in the paint. And then also, you know, a team like the Jazz, they might have got a little bit worse, but a team like the Clippers, you know, they have some turnover. But both those teams are going to be competing with the Blazers, and it's just going to be a really tough season. So talking about tough, what's worst-case scenario?
Worst-case scenario is I see them getting as low as an 11th seed. You know, the worst case would be an injury, not to Nurkic, but to Dame or CJ, because they have such limited guard depth. And, you know, you don't want to see increased minutes for Pat Connaughton. You know, they would certainly have to make a move if they lose one of those guys. But, you know, I can see them slipping out of the playoffs and getting as low as an 11th seed.
Yeah, worst case is definitely like, you know, a few, like I mentioned, they're going to be competing with some good teams for the playoffs. And if, knock on wood, you know, Dame or CJ were to go down at any point, it would be, you know, terrible. Could you see this team in worst case scenario getting under 40 wins?
Yeah, I can see, because they were 41 and 41 last year. And, you know, they were relatively healthy despite Nurkic's late season leg injury. So, you know, if there's even minor injuries where West Dame or CJ are out for long spurts for longer than 5 or 10 games, then they haven't really gotten much better. So there's, you know, losing a game or two is certainly on the cards. But, you know, the actual prediction that we'll get to really soon, I don't think it's likely to happen.
Yeah. What do you think realistically will happen next season? What do you think will actually happen with the Blazers?
Realistically, I think they can increase their win margin last year by 1 or 2 wins. So I got them at 43 wins. You know, the 7th seed, maybe the 8th seed, depending on the teams around them. Sort of similar to last year. But for me, the key for them is going to be consistency throughout the year. Like a lot of teams, there's always that lull before the All-Star, just after the All-Star period. If they can maintain a consistency throughout the year, last year they had some huge lulls. They start off the season hot, they finish the season hot, but that middle period is where they really, really lacked. If they can get some more wins in that period and maintain a bit of focus and on those road trips, then I certainly think that they can increase their win total by 1 or 2.
Yeah, honestly, in my sheet I wrote down, I have them at 42 wins, so, you know, maybe that one boost. So not Yeah, nothing too crazy for them, but it's tough. Like I mentioned, like six times already in the last 5 minutes. But the West is stacked, and like we said, the Blazers didn't get that much better. It's just a lot from Dame and CJ, and they're just gonna have to improve their game even a slight bit just to help the Blazers maintain where they are in the West.
Yeah, definitely. They need to see internal development, whether it's from their stars, whether it's from Nurkic, or whether it's from those backup guys in Harkless, Aminu, and Vonleh. They need to improve, or else the West is going to catch up to them and they're going to be left waning outside that playoff range.
Yeah, honestly, like I'm not really that high on their internal development because I'm not sure how much better some of these guys can get. And that'll kind of lead me to the truth in my next emoji. And what I have right now is this smiley face with like the mid frown, you know, like that frown that kids make when they're just about to like hysterically start crying.
Yes.
That's what I'm feeling for the Blazers. And yep. I just think that Blazers fans see, you know, we're about to suck. Like we're about to be in some real trouble because the West is getting a lot better. We have no cap flexibility. You know, Dame and CJ are bound to get mad at some point. Like what can the Blazers do to make themselves compete in a short period of time?
Yeah, I mean, let's look into the crystal ball, Nicholas. So we've got Dame and CJ right now as probably one of the best tandems in the NBA. If they see a very underwhelming season, I mean, I don't see Dame leaving because he's Portland through and through, and he's, you know, if he were to leave, it would be like Russell Westbrook leaving OKC, which still might happen. But could you see a CJ McCollum looking for greener pastures come next season or the season after? Because if they lose one of those guys, then, you know, it's going to leave the franchise in a disarray. But could it happen?
I mean, there was some mention. I can't recall who it was when there was a big player on the trading block about the Blazers maybe offering CJ and something for him. So I don't know. Maybe he could be their way to get, you know, a bigger star player because he's a very good player. I don't know. He doesn't necessarily seem like the guy that would be like, you know, I want out of Portland. I think it would be more a Portland's decision, like realizing like,
yep,
all right, we need to do something. We need to either retool or, you know, get young players and tell Dame we're going to build soon or something. Because right now I just have a hard time envisioning them in any situation where they're able to put a contending team on the floor in the next three seasons.
Yeah, I mean,
unless they make a huge trade, like nobody on this roster, I think, can step up enough to make them jump that much higher in the West.
No, they're bound to their fate basically for the next sort of couple of seasons. I mean, you know, yes, they've still got youth on their side, but youth without much upside doesn't make much of a difference. Like if comparing, say, a Philly, a Lakers, a Nets, Philly and Lakers especially, when you've got like Alonzo Ball or Brandon Ingram, or you've got and Philly to Markel to Ben Simmons, there's unlimited upside for those guys. But the upside for, say, a Zach Collins, a Caleb Swanigan, and an Al-Farouq Aminu, and a Noah Vonleh is much lower. So,
well, even compare them to another playoff team that has young potential for the future would be like a team like the Bucks. You know, like yeah. I look at the Bucks, they're already competing in the playoffs, but there's a lot of upside on that roster. When I look at the Blazers, you know, I just don't really see it. And even a team like the Jazz, you could probably make an argument because they have some young pieces that aren't fully developed on their roster. So, I think it's definitely tough for Portland.
Yeah, it certainly is. But, you know, I'm going to steal, because our friend Corey isn't here tonight, I'm going to steal one of his moves that he's been going with in terms of the emojis. I'm going to go with a double meaning emoji. So I'm going with the microphone. So on one level, it works for Dame because, you know, he's got some fire rap skills, you know, hashtag Dame Dollar. But it also represents the fact that I think the Blazers can still make a little bit of noise out West. So, shout out to Corey, our boy Corey Waldron, for that emoji move.
Solid one. I definitely Dame. I don't know if you've ever heard his freestyle on Sway in the Morning. That was fire. I've never really listened to a ton of his recorded music, but I think like I know I've kind of like hated on the Blazers in the last 5 minutes, but anytime you have a player like CJ and Dame in a playoff situation where you need to win a few games, they can definitely make it interesting because both those guys could drop 40 or 50 on any given night.
Yeah, their offensive ceiling is huge. And for the record, Nick, for my other podcast that I do some work for, earlier in the season when that album first came out, I actually reviewed it on our podcast, gave it a sort of 3 or 4 minute segment. And, you know, there's some good tracks on there. He gets Lil Wayne on a track. And apparently, you know, in the piece that just came out on OTG Basketball about what's been happening over the summer. He's been working on that second album, and you know, little Weezy's coming out again for it. So his flow is quite nice. I mean, you know, we're comparing a lot of the musical talents to some of the other guys. I mean, you know, Shaq had some bars. Speaking of, did you hear that Shaq diss track to LeVar Ball a few weeks ago?
I heard a few like quotes from it, but I didn't hear the whole thing. Like, I just heard, I saw like an Instagram video clip of it, so you know, it wasn't the full thing, but it was funny. I would say Dame though probably has the best bars in the NBA out of, you know, probably any athlete I've heard recently rap.
Yeah, and I mean, in terms of this. Victor Oladipo, who's now out in Indiana, he started doing some R&B singing, and he's got some smooth tones, like some sort of Usher Raymond tones. So, like, you know, I like it when I see guys not being boxed in, because, you know, we say a lot of athletes, we're like, you know, stick to your lane, you know, stick to sports. But I like it when we see people branch out into other avenues, because, you know, we don't want these guys boxed in. So, you know, shout out to Dame Dollar. I'm hoping to see that second album. I'll definitely cop it on iTunes or Spotify. And
it lets you get a better feel for, you know, the player too. Like you said, when they're not boxed in and you see their outside interests, you know, it kind of makes you like them a little bit more if it's something that you're interested by.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, Russell Westbrook's new fashion book. You know, I'm not going to buy it, but I'm a big fan of a guy like Russell Westbrook's fashion. Like, I remember showing my girlfriend some of his stuff. I'm like, would I look good in that? And she's like, no, it's Russell Westbrook. Look at it. And I'm just like, all right, yeah, that's fair. Burn, I'll take that.
Westbrook, I think he mentioned that he's going to be dropping a clothing line within a year or something like that. So that'll be something cool to keep an eye on.
I'll cop some of that because, I mean, he just signed that. I think it was literally earlier today that he signed the 10-year Jordan deal. And with that is going to come some Russell Westbrook apparel. So, I mean, the hoodies for Melo, if they don't come out soon, then, you know, I'm going to be spending all my money on Russell Westbrook's clothing.
Honestly, like, why? I don't know why Melo just hasn't, gone with a hoodie Melo line, like, can make his own line.
It makes no sense. I mean, I don't know if it's whether he's with Air Jordan or is he with Nike?
I believe he's with Jordan. He was at one point. I don't know if he is with Jordan still or what.
Yeah, because he's been in the Air Jordan hoodies, and in the most recent pickup game with Russ and the rest of them, he was in the sleeveless hoodie, funnily enough, because it must have been a little bit warmer at New York. So, like, he's still got the hoodie game going, Melo, and, you know, I respect it. But come on, Melo, get on it, mate. We want them hoodies. You know, I'll be paying. The shipping will be astronomical to London, but I'll still pay for it.
Yeah, come on, hook Jack up. But let's talk League Pass. You know, you mentioned before this is a team you enjoy. So where do they rank on your League Pass stats, you know, 1 through 10?
Look, I'm not sure if there's been any high numbers yet, Nick, but I'm giving them a 7. I think I heard it might have been Harris had the Lakers at a 6 or a 7 earlier. But for me, I just love watching Dame and CJ play. And, you know, they are two of my favorite players outside of, you know, LeBron James, Kevin Durant. You know, that sort of second tier of superstar that I will just tune in to watch because I want to see an offensive clinic. There aren't many more entertaining guys to watch on an NBA court than those two guys. And there's something about, you know, the underdog status that Portland have as well that I sort of root for that sort of speaks to me as an Australian. You know, we love the underdogs out in Australia. So, you know, I'm rooting for Portland. I'm rooting for Dame. I'm rooting for CJ. So, yeah, I'm going to give him a 7. And I don't think it gets much higher than that. You know, like we've said, their ceiling isn't huge, but 7 out of 10, that's a solid range.
I'm actually going to give them a 7 out of 10 as well. And if you recall, my scale is a little skewed with the Warriors being a 10 and no team being a 9. So me giving that, yeah, that's a 7 is a pretty big deal for this. And like you said, I love watching Dame and CJ. I know I talked a lot of shit about the Blazers this pod, but they're still fun to watch. And they always seem to be, you know, in those high scoring overtime games. And it also kind of works out as, you know, they're always usually the late game. It seems like they're always playing on 10:30 Eastern time. So I'll watch the Nets and then I'll watch the Blazers. And FanDuel-wise, I just feel like I'm always grabbing guys in Portland. Is it maybe it's CJ and Dame? Maybe it's Aminu? Maybe it's Nurkic at the end of last season? You know, it seems like there's always a move to make FanDuel-wise with Portland.
Yeah, there's always a reason. There's definitely always a reason why to tune into the Blazers, that's for sure.
And like, we didn't even talk on this. Like, I love watching Dame Lillard when he catches on fire. Like, he comes off a pick from like 5 feet behind the 3-point line and just drops it.
About to say, is he the best 3-point shooting guard outside of Steph Curry? I think he would be, wouldn't he?
I mean, I think the problem for him would be consistency. You know, he definitely has that hot zone where, you know, he's just hitting nonsense, where kind of Steph does that too, especially off the dribble. Yep. But I think for him, consistency would be the next step in terms of 3-point ball, because like he has the really hot games and then he has the really cold games, but at least he stays confident.
Yeah, and I think with maturity will come that level of being able to go, okay, well, maybe I won't take this 35-foot here and I'll, you know, dribble in and go in for the easy layup and use my, you know, my dribble, my handle. But yeah, I think his volume might have to decrease and his efficiency might have to increase. But, you know, we love seeing guys go off from three. So yeah, Dame is one of my dudes. I'm backing him in.
Yeah, it's tough. And like you said, the efficiency is somewhere he could step up. But with the way Portland's set up, volume-wise, he has to take the volume.
He does.
What can he really do? You would watch the Blazers over what TV show that you like?
Look, this one's getting tricky now. We're getting to the good teams now, Nick. So I'm a huge How I Met Your Mother fan. And, you know, I continue to watch it to this day with, like, you know, The Simpsons, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I watch those shows consistently on repeat. They're my background sort of shows. But I'd still rather cop a new Blazers game than watch How I Met Your Mother for the 8th time. But apparently the news has just come out that How I Met Your Mother might be leaving Netflix. So maybe I might have to change that to a different show, because if How I Met Your Mother's leaving Netflix, I'm not going to download 9 seasons and put it on my computer. That's going to take up way too much space.
I mean, that is a solid show. The only reason it probably is not higher on my TV show ranking is, like you said, it's been out for a while, so I've already seen it. I wouldn't consider it in my rewatch value that high. So I'm giving the Blazers the edge on that one for sure. But I'm going with a good show. And that's to say how much I actually enjoy watching the Blazers. And I'm going with Stranger Things.
Wow, interesting. Probably Netflix's highest thing, highest like product. You've got so much bloody hype over that show. I'm sure we're going to see many, many 11s this Halloween as their Halloween costumes, that's for sure.
And this wasn't as much as in the past where I've taken shots at, you know, good shows. This is more so that I like watching the Blazers. I mean, Stranger Things is pretty good, but there are other shows that I like better personally.
Yeah, and I mean, speaking of Nick, I saw It the other day, and for me, it seemed like a movie, and it had one of the kids from Stranger Things, funny enough, but it seemed like a movie that was like Stranger Things on steroids in a movie form. Have you seen it yet?
No, but you know what is really funny is that I heard someone say the same thing about It. They said it was like Stranger Things on steroids. So no, I got to catch it.
You got to catch it. And there's nothing wrong with that. And there's, funnily enough, there's a Twitter thing going viral right now where it's Pennywise in the sewer. And he's like, what would make you go down to the sewer with Pennywise? And NBA Twitter has caught on. And someone said, I know how to fix Reggie Jackson's knees. The one that I came out with was, I know how to beat the Warriors. There's so many out there that it's
NBA. I saw one with like Kevin Durant. It was like, I have rings.
Yeah, it's just so beautiful. Like in the NBA Twitter, it entertains me for days. I could be, if I wasn't on this podcast right now with you, Nick, my friend, I'd probably be on Twitter still, even though it's midnight out here in London.
Honestly, people really don't understand Twitter until they become part of something like NBA Twitter.
Oh,
like,
yeah, exactly.
The amount, like, people are like, oh, Twitter, you use Twitter? Like, bro, you need to get on Twitter and you need to get on NBA Twitter because that shit is lit. Like,
yeah.
there is something for any type of NBA fan. We can be talking about, like, the funniest thing. There's memes for days. There's jokes for days. There's also, like, deep analysis with analytics, statistics, you know, video footage. There's like so many great things to find on NBA Twitter. It's honestly one of the reasons that the NBA is so enjoyable, because you're able to kind of communicate with other people about it so freely.
And I think that's where, I mean, I'll come up with a hot take here. I'm not a big NFL fan here, but that's where the NBA, we've chatted about this, I know, Nick, off wax, that I think the NBA will eventually overtake the NFL in terms of popularity, because they've embraced the social media presence of things like Twitter, Facebook, and you know, the younger fans are reaching more towards NBA, and you know, the NFL is always going to be hugely popular domestically, but when it comes to internationally, I think, you know, when you look at places like Southeast Asia and China and such, even a place like Australia and the UK, the popularity for NBA as a league is growing exponentially.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I've never really come out and publicly say this. You know, I've talked about it, you privately and stuff, but I definitely think, you know, the NBA is going to jump the NFL in a few years. Like you mentioned, you know, Twitter, social media, just interacting a lot more, you know, and obviously the one good thing the NFL has is fantasy football, and that's really big, but daily fantasy sports has really helped the NBA. And also the NBA and Adam Silver do an amazing job handling social issues, where the NFL do a terrible job. You know, they just do not handle things right. There's just a ton of things going on. I don't want to start the list, but if you ask me, you know, who would I trust in my life, Adam Silver or Roger Goodell, you know, Adam Silver 10 times out of 10, you know, 100 out of 100, you know, it's just, it's night and day in how they treat their players and, you know, the type of situations that go on in the NBA. And like you said, the international impact of the NBA is huge. I'm talking to you and you're in a different country and we're talking about basketball and you watch a ton of games, you know, exactly. In the NFL, like, you know, there's probably NFL fans internationally, but not at the level that there are NBA fans, and not at the level that basketball is so much more popular around the world than NFL football is.
Yeah, and I think the product itself as well is growing. You know, that we're in a golden age in terms of on-court product for the NBA right now. There are, like, if you look at the top tier level of stars, like your top 10 sort of players, like you got LeBron, you got KD, you got Steph, Harden, Westbrook.
Kawhi.
Even the lesser likes that we've been talking about, like Dame and CJ, those guys are straight out ballers. And then you go, like, you know, even to like the lesser tier, if you're looking at, say, like a Kyrie Irving, who to me is just under that. Like, there, if you go to the, if you're looking at the top 30 NBA players right now, you go to an SI list or an ESPN list, you know, that top 30 list, if you were to, you know, put that in, say, like the 90s or the 2000s, like, you know, that those players, some of those players would be like top five, top 10. You know, it's criminal that we still haven't seen Dame in an all-star for like the fifth time I've said this podcast, but I think it certainly helps when it's slowly but surely swinging, my friend Nick.
One thing, and a lot of people that personally know me, I've been a huge NFL guy my whole life, but like you said, the on-court product, I think, you know, consistently there's less injuries in the NBA. The NFL, yeah. You know, we're seeing a star player get knocked out every week, and they're not getting knocked out for 1 week. We're talking about out for the season. Just to happen to mention it, Arizona Cardinals running back David Johnson out 2 to 3 months. You know, he's maybe, you know, top three running back in the NFL, and he's not going to play the rest of the year. It just isn't as common in the NBA. And then also, 82 games in the NBA season, 16 games in the NFL season. I can watch the NBA almost all year round, talk about it, especially with Summer League, the Euro basketball. It's just – I just think it's a lot more entertaining year-round, and the NBA offseason is just fucking nuts.
Yeah, it's crazy, and I think you might have mentioned it in one of the other podcasts, saying how, like, next year's offseason is going to be even wilder with the, you know, what's going on with the cap and what's going on with a lot of players coming out of contract. So it's certainly a year-round sport, and that's saying something for a product that is, you know, on court for 5 or 6 months. But, you know, the reason why us at OTG have been able to produce so much content is because this off season has been so wild. You know, we've been able to produce podcasts, we've been able to produce quality articles and, you know, the memes and everything, because, you know, if we were to be covering the NFL or, you know, another league, it'd be less likely. So, you know, the content there for us to talk about is much greater. That's for sure.
Yeah. Like maybe we like the, like, it's ridiculous in the sense that the NFL will probably have a couple cold seasons where there's not, I mean, a couple cold months where there's really not anything to talk about. Like this month maybe is the first month that nothing big has really happened. The last big thing was Kyrie Irving, but you know, I think Media Day is under a month away. So things are just crazy in the NBA. And like you said, we got a ton of content and ton of things to talk about. That's why all these podcasts are going over an hour long. But that wraps it up for today. Jack, thanks for hopping on. But thanks always to the listeners for listening in. And Jack, I'll catch you next time.
Yeah, ciao, my friends.